from deep inside your radio.
And for very complicated reasons not known to mere mortals, what formerly was CD Machine 1 is now CD Machine 1A. Don't ask. And don't tell. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm back at the Le Show Dome, in case that wasn't obvious. And because the celebrating is, the returns have been counted, so the celebrating is over, of course. But news from outside the bubble never ends. Here's one I bet you haven't heard. Pakistan, our friend Pakistan, our ally in the war on, what is it now? The tyrannical Pakistani government. They're not free yet, but boy, they're our allies. Pakistan says it has paid $540,000 American to help four former wanted tribal militants in South Waziristan, that's part of Pakistan. These militants who have now come in from the cold have gotten money from the Pakistani government to pay their debt to Al-Qaeda. I swear, it's right here in black and white from the BBC, no less. Military Operations Chief in South Waziristan, Lieutenant General Safdar Hussein, spelled with an A, so you know he's a good guy, said the payments were part of a peace deal signed this week with tribesmen. It is the first time Pakistan has admitted making such payments. General Hussein said the four former wanted militants had insisted they needed the money to pay back huge sums to Al-Qaeda. Well, that's a good reason. It's not like we needed the money to pay the gangsters. Oh, why didn't you say so? Haji Sharif and Molvi Abbas received 15. Oh, you don't care who received how much. A sum of 20 million rupees was also offered to the tribal leader, Baitullah Masood, who signed the peace deal. He rejected the money. The militants had originally sought 170 million rupees. What would that be? More than a million American. The peace deal offers an amnesty in return for the tribe's pledge not to support Al-Qaeda, except with the money that they're getting from the Pakistani government to pay them, you see. Don't you know? And from Australia, Australian weapons inspector Rod Barton worked as special advisor to the Iraq Survey Group, the CIA-led operation to find Iraqi weapons of mass destruction after the war. He's a microbiologist. He has extensive experience as a senior weapons inspector. He worked with the UN Special Commission in Iraq from 1991 to 98 and later with Hans Blix. Barton says, I'm giving you his bio here so you'll understand who he is when he says, as he does, in this story from the Australian newspaper The Age, the CIA changed an Iraq Survey Group report last year, an early report that concluded there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Quote, the attitude was, you've only got to go out there and you will find them. Iraq's a big country, he said. I was an experienced inspector and I knew that there would be some indicators if they really had a program, and there were no indicators whatsoever. End quote. Senior CIA staff told him to write a brief report with no conclusions. He was told to leave out the group's belief that two trailers found shortly after the war were not mobile biological weapons labs, as Colin Powell had claimed at the UN. Of that report presented to the U.S. Congress on March 30th of last year, Barton said, quote, I thought it was dishonest, unquote. Barton resigned in protest and left Baghdad, as did a senior British inspector and another Australian. No Americans, I guess. He has since returned to Baghdad at the request of the head of the Iraq Survey Group and written a new report that he describes as, quote, objective and neutral. It concludes there were no WMDs in Iraq. So maybe blaming the CIA isn't such a bad idea after all. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hot to handle when you think you got it. what you're thinking. What am I thinking you're thinking? Maybe you're rising in the way that I'm sinking. You got my number, red hot rumba. I know your angle, love is a tangle.
You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, then snap. Those eyes, those sighs, they're part of the tender trap. You're hand in hand beneath the trees, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kinda smart until your heart just goes whap. Those trees, that breeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice, the folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You're hooked, you're cooked, you're caught in the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice, the folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map, and then you wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love, and love is the tender trap.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this pre-Valentine's Day edition of the show. And before anything else, it's time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, Tales of Airport Security. Won't you? Dear Harry, wanted to tell you the experience of my family of four on a recent trip to Maui, Hawaii. This is from Nadine. Nadine writes, On our way out of town through LAX, my carry-on luggage was prodded, poked, and pawed over in search of, quote, a tool you would use for fixing glasses, unquote. I think they were looking for a slim screwdriver. I commented that I didn't believe I packed such a tool, but would love it if she found one, since I had just had a conversation with my husband, whose glasses lens was loose and needed fixing. After many minutes, my disheveled suitcase was released without finding anything, and on we went. On the return flight through Kahului Airport, our luggage was put through the usual screening devices. My husband's luggage was scrutinized individually for contraband plants or fruits and veggies at least three times. At the last screening point, there was a sign that read, "Yes, you do need to be screened one more time." Exclamation point. Okay, fair enough. But the exotic ginger plant in my luggage was never found. The odd thing, though, was what I found in my lunch pail when I got home. It was a 7-inch steak knife I forgot I had packed for a day trip to Hana. My son was carrying the lunch bag throughout the airport, put through security points, and it was never detected. About that ginger plant, Nadine. Oh, and ladies and gentlemen, while we're on the subject, I, your friendly host of this broadcast, was flying back from New Orleans, Louisiana. Had my carry-on bag singled out for a search after it went through the X-ray machine because there was a microphone in it. Who carries microphones, ladies and gentlemen? And so the bag was set aside on the table past the X-ray machine. One TSA person indicated to another that the bag needed looking at. The second TSA guy, then shortly thereafter left the vicinity. Two other TSA guys came over, put on rubber gloves, looked at other people's bags, while I stood there with my bag waiting for the inspection that I was told was necessary. Minutes went by, just as they are right now, except without music. Finally, having a flight to catch, I started weighing the question of whether I should leave, and if so, would I be caught and subjected to unspeakable Gitmo-like stuff? But it became clear after about 5 minutes, nobody had any interest in my bag. So, like an ordinary citizen minding my own business, I picked it up and walked away. Tales of Airport Security, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Don't shoot, whatever you do. This from the Wall Street Journal. A month into the cruise industry's high season, when cruise companies get the bulk of their bookings, more than 1,100 passengers on 7 ships have gotten sick, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. However, the good news is that that agency is having its budget cut in the president's budget. But that's not part of this story. That's part of another story. Anyway, at the current rate, the number of onboard outbreaks in 2005 will top last year's record of 37. That's outbreaks, not individual incidences of disease. There's no sign that the latest illnesses are hurting bookings. That happened in 2003 after negative publicity from an outbreak. Cruise lines have tried squashing the virus with everything from stronger industrial cleaners and new sanitation regimens to installing antibacterial hand sanitizers near the buffet line. Those efforts haven't proven enough to keep the virus at bay, so now the cruise industry is proposing a new remedy of sorts. Frustrated by the media coverage that often accompanies outbreaks of onboard illnesses, the International Council of Cruise Lines, a trade group that lobbies on behalf of cruise companies, has asked the Centers for Disease Control to eliminate the word outbreak from the agency's health reports. If they use the words increased incidences, it wouldn't be misreported by the media, says Michael Cry, the trade group's president. Cry, baby. The CDC acknowledges that it is considering eliminating outbreak from its reports. We're trying to come up with a term that better describes an issue of public health importance, says David Forney, chief of the CDC's Vessel Sanitation Program. But he says a change isn't certain. We're not going to change just because the industry doesn't like it. The term outbreak dates back a number of years when bacterial infections were the dominant source of illness. Now it's viral infections, which tend to be less severe. So the CDC is reexamining the terminology. So if you can't stand the outbreak, get out of the kitchen. That's what I say. From a British newspaper, The Independent, training of Iraq, it's against the war, for your information. Training of Iraq's security forces, crucial to any exit strategy for Britain and the United States, is going so poorly that the Pentagon has stopped giving figures for the number of combat-ready indigenous troops. It's not a numbers game. It's like the election, unless we win, in which case, it's look at those numbers. Instead, only figures for troops on hand are being issued. The small number of soldiers, National Guardsmen, and police capable of operating against the insurgency is concealed in an overall total of Iraqis in uniform, which includes raw recruits and police who've gone on duty after as little as 3 weeks' training. In some cases, they have no weapons, body armor, or even documents to show they're in the police. That might be a safety factor. The resulting confusion over numbers has allowed the U.S. administration to claim it is halfway to meeting the target of training 270,000 Iraqi forces. According to experts consulted by The Independent, the reality is that there may be as few as 5,000 troops who could be considered combat ready. The gap between troops on hand and the overall target has actually widened in recent months, according to John Pike of GlobalSecurity.org, a Washington-based think tank. Isn't it difficult to think in a tank? Doesn't the reverberative sound just kind of get on your nerves after a while? I would say a think beach would be more like it. But they didn't ask me. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're almost sorry.
No, there are people are actually sorry this week. I believe. We'll check. Get back to me on that. CNN News Chief Eason Jordan quit Friday amid a furor over remarks he made in Switzerland last month about journalists killed by the U.S. military in Iraq. Jordan said he was quitting to avoid CNN being unfairly tarnished by the controversy. During a panel discussion at the World Economic Forum, Jordan said he believed that several journalists who were killed by coalition forces in Iraq had been targeted. Then he quickly backed off the remarks, explaining he meant to distinguish between journalists killed because they were in the wrong place and those killed because they were shot at by American forces who mistook them for the enemy. I never meant to imply U.S. forces acted with ill intent, and I apologize to anyone who thought I said or believed otherwise, Jordan wrote. Reports indicated that there were serious pressure inside CNN for him to resign. He had no current operational responsibility over network programming at this point in time. And there were reports that interesting factors in his private life also mitigated against his staying at CNN. Much like Jeff Gannon. Let's interrupt the apologies for a moment. Jeff Gannon, because this was a pair of media figures who quit this week, Eason Jordan at CNN One, and Jeff Gannon from Talon News in Washington quit after it was revealed that though he was accredited to attend White House press briefings and had asked a notoriously pro-administration question at one of the briefings, his name wasn't Jeff Gannon, it was James Guckert or Guckert, and Talon News is not a news agency, it's a GOP publicity apparatus. And both these guys resigned after these information hit the blog. So it's the blogs versus the media. The difference is, of course, that Eason Jordan uses his real name, and he apologized. Now, back to the apologies. Jason Giambi repeatedly apologized to fans, the New York Yankees, and his teammates this week, but refused to say why. That's a new one. Jason, congratulations. You're in the book. And he also refused to discuss whether he used steroids. Came to Yankee Stadium to make his first public comment since it was reported in December that he told a federal grand jury that he took steroids for at least three seasons. There's been a lot of distraction over the last year, and I'm sorry for that. I really am. I feel I let down the fans. I feel I let down the media. I feel I let down the Yankees. Not only the Yankees, but my teammates. Hey, aren't his teammates Yankees? I accept full responsibility, he went on. I'm sorry, but I'm trying to go forward now. Jason? It's one leg at a time. Dateline Los Angeles, a USC student who was offended by decorations at Alpha Epsilon Pi's Mexico-themed party last month, filed an official complaint with the Office of Student Judicial Affairs and Community Standards, prompting an apology from the fraternity. Jesus Cuellar, a sophomore majoring in Spanish, said he went to Fraternity Row the night of the Once Upon a Time in Mexico party and saw a chain-link fence, barbed wire, a danger keep-out sign, flashing red lights, and a cardboard poster reading Welcome to Mexico outside of the fraternity house. He said a Mexican-themed party would not have bothered him, but the image of U.S.-Mexican border did. The display was saying Mexicans are dangerous and should be kept behind barbed wire, he said. AEPI President Brian Fisher sent an email apology on February 3rd to Cuellar, several university Mexican-American organizations. Please accept our deepest apologies and understand that we truly did not mean to cause any harm, the email read. And Jesus, besides, it's just USC. Dateline Budapest, the Prime Minister of Hungary apologized this week for joking that Saudi Arabia's soccer team had, quote, very many terrorists on its roster, unquote. Prime Minister Ferenc, oh, please, made the remark over the weekend of the Socialist Party event referring to Hungary's 0-0 tie against Saudi Arabia and Turkey last week. I apologize to anyone who, with or without reason, was offended by that sentence, he said. With or without reason. That's a new one. Last week during the Super Bowl, in one of the slots allotted for local commercials, a law firm of Alexander and Catalano, this is in, where is this? Does this say? It's local somewhere in this country. Ran an advertisement that featured Asian people watching commercials from the game. Recognizing the jingle for the law firm in one of the ads, the group breaks out in song. The actors in the commercial are speaking their native tongue, but the subtitles made it appear they were speaking in broken English. Peter Catalano said the firm had received three complaints. It was supposed to be cute and funny, he said. If anyone was offended, we apologize. That was aired on a Fox affiliate. It's not really a Fox apology. Don't get excited. London Dateline, Prime Minister Tony Blair apologized to 11 people wrongfully jailed for IRA bombings 3 decades ago, a case regarded as one of Britain's worst miscarriages of justice that was dramatized in the film In the Name of the Father. I'm very sorry that they were subjected to such an ordeal and such an injustice, said Blair, who was lobbied by his Irish counterpart to apologize on the behalf of the British government. Of course, the good thing is nobody's being wrongfully jailed for terrorist activities these days. So we can look back at that and feel very superior. Speaking of Ireland, the Irish Times journalist Kevin Myers has issued an unconditional apology for his remarks in the paper's Irishman's Diary column this week. In his column, Myers referred to unmarried mothers as the mothers of bastards. He says he bitterly regretted clouding an issue of major importance in Irish life by using provocative, ill-thought-out, and confrontational language. He said he had deliberately used the word bastard because he genuinely felt there was no stigma attached to it, but he said he had not allowed for other people's sensitivities, and he had been wrong. The Irish Times also said it regrets any offense caused. Here in Los Angeles, there is much community outrage over the police shooting a 13-year-old boy, Devin Brown, an eighth grader who was shot and killed a week ago after a 3.5-mile chase. He was driving a car, a little young. Police initially said he was a gang member, but later said they could not confirm that information. Police Chief William Bratton has announced a change in police procedures regarding shooting moving vehicles. Police Commissioner Rick Caruso issued an apology to the African-American community and to all of Los Angeles. I apologize, Caruso said. We need to do the right thing. Yeah. Plan B. Do the right thing. Bill Moyers has apologized to former U.S. Interior Secretary James Watt for referring to a quote which has been wrongly attributed to Watt for years during a speech Moyers gave at Harvard Medical School. The text of Moyers' speech has since appeared in several newspapers and on numerous websites. I said I had made a mistake in quoting him without checking with him, Moyers said. I should have done my homework. Thank goodness he's not a jerk. Oh, he is. A Florida fireman is facing an animal cruelty charge for allegedly biting the head off a pet parrot during a party this past week. Bruce Coates told police he was drinking and could not remember details of the beheading, for which he apologized. My guess is beer and Jack Daniels, but I couldn't be sure about that. But that seems to be... The parrot, named Isabel. Coates was shooting pool with the late parrot's owner and other partygoers about 1 a.m. when he grabbed the bird, a female Quaker parrot, from one reveler's shoulder, put the bird's head in his mouth, and decapitated it. Then he spat out the parrot's head, tossed the bird's corpse on the floor, and fled the scene. Well, that shows some sobriety. The parrot's owner said Isabel was a talking bird valued at $200 and was a valued member of the family. Oh, here's a Fox affiliate apology. Sorry. Fox affiliate Channel 18 in Charlotte, North Carolina, apologized this week for airing a spoof on the Muslim tradition of visiting Mecca. Always fun. Promoting a news story about elitism and snobbery at upscale South Park Mall. The station used images of pilgrims coming to Mecca, one of the world's holiest religious sites. The Hajj, a pilgrimage Muslims take to the holy city of Mecca, the promo said. Members of Charlotte's elite make a similar pilgrimage to the corporate altar of brand-name merchandise, South Park Mall, where believers gather to be among their kind, said the voiceover, which then showed the mall and the word Mecca. The thing that struck me most was the superimposing of the word Mecca over a shot of the mall, said Scott Darden, a Charlotte Muslim. It just didn't sit well. The station lodged 10 complaints from viewers, said Jeff Arrowwood, the station's program director and promotion manager. He apologized. Australian Treasurer Peter Costello said he and the government are sorry for what happened to Cornelia Rao, the 39-year-old former Qantas flight attendant who suffers from schizophrenia, had been missing for 10 months after escaping from a hospital psychiatric unit on March 17th of last year. She was only found again after her mother read a newspaper report of concerns for a mysterious German-speaking woman who seemed mentally ill. Cornelia Rao, who had maintained she was a German illegal immigrant named Anna Schmidt, was moved to a psychiatric hospital the next day. Her sister said doctors had advised her at the weekend that because her sister Cornelia had gone for so long without medication, they could not tell how long it would take for her to come out of her present state. The Australian government is sorry, although the Prime Minister won't apologize yet. And finally, just 90 minutes after the marriage of Prince Charles and Camilla Parker Bowles was announced, the British National Archives put out a press release titled, quote, Prince Charles Dies of a Broken Heart, is about a royal scandal that involved Prince Charles falling in love with an unsuitable older woman, unquote. The prince in question was a 17th century Prince Charles of Brandenburg, not the Prince of Wales. No, Brandenburg, that's in Germany. What would that have to do with the British royal? A National Archives spokeswoman said the press release was intended to coincide with Valentine's Day and that no insult to Charles or Mrs. Parker Bowles was intended. All I can do is apologize. It was never intentional, said the spokeswoman. I wasn't even aware that Camilla was older than Prince Charles. Ouch. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. No.
Shadows away, love. Walked right in and brought my sunniest day. One magic moment, and my heart seemed to know. Said hello, though not a word was spoken. One look and I forgot the gloom of the past. One look and I had found my future.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up, the first of our special travel segments, always trying to broaden the appeal of the broadcast, and this is, as I say, the first of a series of very special travel segments. This is the Ultimate Foodie World Tour in search of the perfect French toast. We're going to get to that moments from now, but first, we do have a call on the newsmaker line, and this doesn't happen that often, so we're going to take it and see. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Shearer.
Shearer. Hello. Yes, Shab Shab. Is that you? Is that Shab Shab?
It is Shab Shab. Okay. I'm calling you from newly free Baghdad.
Well, congratulations on that. I should explain to our listeners, Shab Shab. We first talked to him a couple years ago. He was one of the more than two dozen Saddam Hussein impersonators that we were told Saddam Hussein had employed for various purposes during his reign.
Yes.
And he's been checking in with us occasionally since then. Shab Shab, you're not blogging, are you?
I don't think so. I was constipated a little while in November, but I think that was basically some Jordanian falafel.
Okay.
I'm fine.
I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you.
We haven't talked to you in a while, and you did mention the newly free Baghdad. I guess you're celebrating the elections and looking forward to the reconstruction?
I'm looking forward to the trial, Mr. Shearer.
The trial.
This is so important for not only for the Iraqi people, mm-hmm. but for myself personally.
Okay.
Because, as you know, I think I told you last time I called, mm-hmm. Demand for Saddam lookalike have dried up.
Really?
Absolutely.
Because I remember you saying that after he was taken into American custody, that it was almost like a birthday clown kind of demand for him.
Yes. That was true for a very little while. It was like a fad. It was like a hit record, you say.
Yes.
It's on the chart 1 week, mm-hmm. and the next week, who was that?
Who was that?
And same with this demand.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yes.
especially since he's been in court,
uh-huh.
people have seen the new look.
Yeah.
It's impossible for a person who's not in prison really to look like that.
Really?
That's not makeup, Mr. Shearer.
Hmm.
That's not prosthetic appliances.
Uh-huh.
That's systematic starvation.
Wow.
That much I don't love my job.
Yeah.
But as I say, I'm looking forward to the trial, mm-hmm. the Saddam Hussein trial. We're wondering when it's going to be. It was scheduled.
It wasn't.
This was off the schedule.
Yeah.
This is what is driving the hope of myself and my family.
I recall it being on the schedule and then off, and I haven't heard about it lately.
No.
What would be your involvement in the trial?
Mr. Shearer,
mm-hmm.
Obviously, Al-Iraqiya television
mm-hmm.
Would want broadcast of the trial.
Of course they
but
would.
But there's no cameras in the Iraqi courtroom,
ah.
which is totally unknown in Iraqi history.
I didn't know.
Islamic practice
uh-huh.
of cameras in the court. So there will have to be a recreation and a reenactment
uh-huh.
in some way
mm-hmm.
of the proceedings.
Yeah.
And
Are you...
There's no deal. I just am, I believe, in my own mind at
mm-hmm.
least,
mm-hmm.
a frontline
Competitor, yeah, okay.
shall we say,
yeah.
for the task.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm presenting myself for the task, since so many of the producers of Al-Iraqiya live in U.S. and L.A.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you would like to be,
yes.
in other words, the Saddam Hussein in the reenactment of the Saddam Hussein trial.
That is correct.
Am I the first person you've talked to about this?
No. Mr. Serrer. No. There is a competition. There will be... I am being degraded, sir, into the task of auditioning for the part that I have lived for the last 20 years.
Wow.
You cannot imagine the degradation, the humiliation that this is bringing upon my family.
I think I can. I'm in show business.
Well,
So are all the former Saddam impersonators competing?
No. Mm. No. We believe we're elected to the new constituent, whatever.
Assembly?
Assembly. Mm-hmm. In the recent elections. We don't know yet, but we believe.
Okay, because the figures are not obviously final.
Correct,
did you run in that election, Shabshab, by the way?
No, Mr. Shirer, please.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
A Saddam Hussein personality to be one of hundreds to be mulling over, like, tea-sipping Englishmen, some words on paper.
Uh-huh.
This is not a role for Saddam Hussein impersonator. This is not what makes people look up.
I see.
If at the end of this process mm-hmm. there is a constitutional election mm-hmm. for leader...
Mm.
I might be... Anyway,
I see.
That's another...
Of course. All right, but let's get...
Yes. So two elected, mm-hmm. three fled the country, other
really?
Reasons,
mm-hmm.
Tie-ins with Chalabi. It's not important.
Okay, fine.
But there are 18 Saddam lookalikes.
Mm-hmm.
This is humiliating, sir. I was in an office last week, early part of this audition process. The office has magazines 2 years old, sir, from before the war.
I mean,
this is an outrage.
No, I understand. Are you trying to get any assistance?
Yes.
Are you calling me for any help? Because I am, of course, a well-known show business persona.
No, I appreciate that, Mr. Shirin,
okay.
but the answer is kindly mm-hmm. but firmly no.
All right.
I am trying to contact Edward Moss.
Edward Moss. Okay, that is the Michael Jackson impersonator who this
yes.
week was selected to
yes.
star in the
yes.
E-Channel reenactments
yes.
of the Michael Jackson trial,
right.
Whenever that starts. You want to talk to him about...
I want to talk to him about the techniques of auditioning,
uh-huh.
Acting tips. He
mm-hmm.
may have just to pick his brain, Mr. Shirer. This is so important to me.
I understand.
And I feel I've got a head start because he must make himself up. It's an
yes.
hour for him, Mr. Shirer, to get into character.
Yeah, I read that.
I walk out of the house, take off my pajamas. I am in character. You see what I'm saying? I live the part.
I would hope you take off your pajamas before you walk out the door.
Mr. Shirer, please.
I guess the difference is that Edward Moss, even the people at E-Channel are saying he probably won't have a speaking part
yes.
because there's grave doubt about Michael Jackson actually testifying in his own
serious
trial.
Doubt.
Clearly, Saddam yes. Hussein is going to be a speaking part.
He will be the star of the show, Mr. Shirer.
Right.
And I don't need tips on how to sound, how to look like Saddam Hussein.
Mm.
I need tips on how to get the freaking part.
Uh-huh.
And so if Edward Moss can contact you through me or me through you, with however it works in your country,
mm-hmm.
This would be a blessing upon my entire tribe.
Okay. So, I would imagine that this is not just an economic necessity for you. That last we talked, your high-end stereo business was still doing pretty well.
Mr. Shirer,
mm-hmm.
please don't insult me with such absurdities. Who in their right mind, given the current security situation, is going to say to his wife, honey, I'll be back in 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to risk car bombs and suicide attacks
mm-hmm.
to listen to a demo of some new KRK speakers from England. They're very high-end. It's worth the risk.
No, I...
Please.
I understand what you're saying. So let's get back to the auditions,
yes.
Shop.
Yes.
When are there finals? Is this being narrowed down in some way?
Oh, Mr. Shirer, there's a big build-up.
Mm.
The early auditions, which I passed, mm-hmm. I'm proud to say.
Well, congrats.
But it's like big deal, so I've got a quarter when I need a dollar, in the old American saying. But yes, the finals mm-hmm. would be on Al-Iraqi television.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Iraqi Unidol.
Uh-huh.
It will be a big
I would imagine.
Pageant
yeah.
type show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to that. I will kill on that broadcast.
Well, I would.
But I really need all the assistance possible to get to that point. People who want to contribute to my training.
What exactly are you kind
I'm
of
doing some improv classes.
Really?
In Amman, the Jordan. Security situation is too bad in Baghdad for improv classes.
Wow.
And this is, I'm not complaining.
No.
But this is just the way it is. Mm-hmm. Someone needs to report this to you.
Well, I appreciate it.
So that is a cost item, obviously, to go
to and from.
And the hotel room in Amman.
Yeah.
Not to mention the cost of the courses.
No, I understand.
But I'm willing to do this because I believe in my mission.
Yes.
This is my destiny, Mr. Sharir.
Yes.
And God willing, it will be done.
I just want to point out, we cannot raise money for anybody other than ourselves, Shab Shab and Public Radio.
All right.
I wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you.
It's nice to know that there still is a place in the Middle East that's safe enough to have improv classes.
Yes.
And
I
appreciate you bringing us up to date, and good luck to you, and keep us posted, will you?
Thank you, Mr. Sharir.
Sure.
And if Edward Moss is listening or gets in touch with you in any way, please, you have my number, my email, my website, my fax, my instant message account. I'm on your buddy list, am I not?
Actually, you're not, Shop Shop, but thank you again for the call. We're so out of time for this newsmaker call, and unfortunately we don't have time. So next week, we'll join that search for the perfect French toast here on Le Show.
Can't buy me love, love, can't buy me love. I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel all right. Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love. I'll give you all I've got to give if you say you love me too. I may not have a lot to give, but what I got I'll give to you. I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love, can buy me love. Everybody tells me so, can buy me love. No, 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 no. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money, money can buy me love. Money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. Can buy me love. Love. Buy me love.
And ladies and gentlemen, the parade of copyrighted features continues here on the broadcast. As I now prepare to, I'm going to read the trades for you. All right, the preparation's over. First, and there are a lot of trades this week, so. First, from broadcasting and cable. Television shows should not be forced to disclose every time they include paid product placements. It's according to a top Federal Trade Commission staffer. The FTC declined to take formal action on a request by Commercial Alert that it require product placements to be disclosed. Mary Engel, the Associate Director for Advertising Practices, told the activist group there's nothing inherently deceptive about product placements that should trigger a requirement that programmers tell viewers that Coca-Cola, Budweiser, or McDonald's paid to have their products appear or be named in a show. Producers are increasingly turning to placements as an alternative source of revenue. Engel noted advertisements are required to be identified when a viewer might be led to believe wrongly that a product is being endorsed by an objective third party rather than a paid spokesman. But wait, there's more. Federal Communications, this is from Multichannel News. Federal Communications Commission Chairman Michael Powell, leaving the agency next month, not having finished work on a plan to complete television station's conversion to digital-only transmission by December 31st, 2008. Sorry. I wish I could, but regrettably it's not going to be me to do it. I'm not going to do it, Powell told reporters Thursday. Under current law, the transition to digital will end either December 31st, 2006, or when 85% of TV households in a community have digital TV reception equipment. Because the 85% test was viewed as prolonging the transition more than necessary, Powell came up with a new method for calculating 85% penetration. Pardon the expression. Under his plan, cable households that receive digital TV signals in fine down-converted analog format would count toward the 85% threshold. The plan was controversial because broadcasters wanted authority to force cable to deliver their digital signals to the home, which would require cable subscribers to obtain set-top boxes or still expensive digital TV sets. Powell is leaving that problem to others. And on the same subject, also from the trades, the National Association of Broadcasters lost a battle on Thursday when the Federal Communications Commission refused to require cable operators to carry multiple digital streams from digital TV stations. Using such, quote, multicast streams, broadcast stations could split their channel slots into several channels, potentially creating a mini cable system within a cable system. The National Association of Broadcasters has argued that mandated multicasting is vital to the health of free over-the-air TV programming and could even accelerate the digital TV transition. Just a note of clarification, if they're broadcasting several streams on their one channel, ladies and gentlemen, they're not broadcasting high definition on any of them. Ain't that cute? And finally, from Advertising Age, an Ogilvy & Mather executive placed former colleague Shona Seifert at a meeting where some ad agency staff members were asked to bill hours they would never actually work on the White House Anti-Drug Office account. There is a criminal proceeding involving the advertising agency's work for the Office of National Drug Control Policy. Ms. Seifert and Thomas Early have pleaded not guilty to an 11-count indictment accusing them of conspiracy and making false billing claims against the federal government. That's right. This is your brain on false billing. Play on words that seems only natural when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature.
Look, look at what you've done. You've hit and run my heart and I just can't seem to think of saving myself and I still don't understand why you'd be the man for me. But I can't seem to think of loving someone else. And it's so mysterious. Well, let's hear it for love. I could be home in my bed and you'd be chasing aeroplanes. I could pretend to be dead and you'd be entertaining friends. You're like a hole in my head, but the world will never be the same without you. No, the world will never ever be the same. What you've done, I'm overwhelmed and overcome, and I can't seem to make you give me any more of yourself. And look at what you did, you lit the sky, then you closed the lid, and now I'm like a dog who's crawling on your floor. And it's so mysterious. Hear it for love. 'Cause I could be home
be chasing airplanes. I could pretend to be dead, and you'd be entertaining friends. You're like a home in my head, but the world will never be the same without you. The world will never ever be the same. It's curious, it's mysterious, it makes you furious. The places where will you find love? There's no planet, it's a man and a woman, it's heaven and it's human, and there's nothing better going. It's the taste of danger, it's sex with a stranger, it's the last man on earth, it's a dog in a manger. So let's hear it, let's hear it.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the Dallas Morning News, abstinence-only programs, the hallmark of the Bush administration's sex education policy, have little impact on the behavior of Texas teenagers. The first evaluation of programs used throughout the state has found that students in almost all high school grades were more sexually active after abstinence education. Researchers don't believe the programs encourage teenagers to have sex, only that the abstinence messages did not interfere with the usual trends among adolescents growing up. Says researcher Buzz Pruitt of Texas A&M, we didn't find what many would like for us to find. And the official in charge of building the proposed Yucca Mountain nuclear waste dump in Nevada has submitted her resignation, Margaret Chu, not Margaret Cho, due to personal circumstances. She plans to return to New Mexico. The waste dump, of course, will never be built. That's just a prediction from the good hands people here at the show. And Illinois lawmakers have pushed for radio and television spots promoting the $25 million dollar reward for the capture of Osama bin Laden, triggered by a congressman who made a trip to Islamabad last year, asking the then ambassador, who was overseeing the publicity for the awards program. The ambassador said, I don't know who's working the rewards program. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know who's working this show anymore. I'm going to take it on out of here. This concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, over the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived on your computer whenever you want it, harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at audible.com/LeShow and on channel 108 at Sirius Satellite Radio. And it would be just like somebody figuring out who's working the awards account if you'd be willing to join with me then, would you?
Alrighty, thank you very much.
The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show's playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.